Morning, we'll be in chapter 40 of Isaiah. I'll begin by reading it. Verse 1, comfort ye my people, saith your God. Speak ye comfortably to Jerusalem, and cry unto her that her warfare is accomplished, that her iniquity is pardoned, for she has received of the Lord's hand double for all of her sins. The voice of him that cries in the wilderness, prepare ye the way of the Lord, make straight in the desert a highway for our God. Every valley shall be exalted, and every mountain and hill shall be made low, and the crooked shall be made straight, and the rough places plain. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken it. The voice said, cry, and he said, what shall I cry? All flesh is grass, and all the goodliness thereof is as the flower of the field. The grass withers, and the flower fades, because the Spirit of the Lord blows upon it. Surely the people is grass. The grass withers, and the flower fades, but the word of our God shall stand forever. O Zion that brings good tidings, get thee up to the high mountain. O Jerusalem that brings in good tidings, lift up your voice with strength, lift it up, be not afraid. Say unto the cities of Judah, behold your God. Behold, the Lord God shall come with the strong hand, and his arm shall rule for him. Behold, his reward is with him, and his work before him. He shall feed his flock like a shepherd. He shall gather the lambs with his arm, and carry them in his bosom, and shall gently lead those that are with young. Who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, and meted out heaven with the span, and comprehended the dust of the earth in a measure, and weighed the mountains in scales and the hills in a balance? Who has directed the Spirit of the Lord, or being his counselor has taught him? With whom took he counsel and instructed him and taught him in the path of judgment and taught him knowledge and showed to him the way of understanding? Behold, the nations are as a drop of a bucket and are counted as a small dust of the balance. Behold, he takes up the isles as a very little thing. And Lebanon is not sufficient to burn, nor the beasts thereof sufficient for a burnt offering. All nations before him are as nothing, and they are counted to him less than nothing and vanity. To whom then will you liken God, or what likeness will you compare to him? The workman melts a graven image, and the goldsmith spreads it over with gold, and casts silver chains. He that is so impoverished that he has no oblation chooses a tree that will not rot. He seeks unto him a cunning workman to prepare a graven image, and shall not be moved. Have you not known? Have you not heard? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundations of the earth? It is he that sits upon the circle of the earth, and the inhabitants thereof are as grasshoppers, that stretches out the heavens as a curtain and spreads them out as a tent to dwell in, that brings the princes to nothing and makes the judges of the earth as vanity. Yea, they shall not be planted, yea, they shall not be sown, yea, their stock shall not take root in the earth, and he shall also blow upon them, and they shall wither, and the whirlwind shall take them away as stubble. To whom then will you liken me, or shall I be equal? Says the Holy One. Lift up your eyes on high, and behold, who has created these things that brings out their host by number? He called them all by names by the greatness of his might, for that he is strong in power, and not one fails. Why sayest thou, O Jacob, and speakest, O Israel, my way is hid from the Lord, and my judgment is passed over from my God? Hast thou not known? Hast thou not heard that the everlasting God, the Lord, the Creator, the ends of the earth, faints not, neither is weary? There is no searching of his understanding. He gives power to the faint, and to them that have no might he increases strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fail. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary, and they shall walk and not faint. Now let's go back and look at the first verse again. Break it down. Comfort ye my people, says your what? Your Elohim. Now, I'm going to tell you, that's not what people think it is, that plurality of God. He says, your Elohim. Who is our Elohim? Christ. The many-membered body of Christ. See, it's not working at one person. You got to realize, comfort the Elohim. He said, speak ye comfortably. And that's not the right word. The word comfortably here is actually two words. It should say, speak ye from your heart to Jerusalem. Okay? Speak from the heart to Jerusalem. Jerusalem is representing the first fruits. What it's representing. And cry to her because her warfare is accomplished. What's the word is mean? What is it?
Present.
It's a present tense word. So it says, right now, whenever you read this, your warfare is what? It's done. It's over with. We don't have to fight the war. The book says the battle is the Lord's.
Quit wrestling.
Stop wrestling with God. God's the one behind it all, isn't he? Was you talking to yourself?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I just wondered. Not just checking.
Quit
wrestling. There you go. You're getting it right. Okay. But her warfare is accomplished because her iniquity is pardoned. Hello. And that word pardon here literally means the debt's been satisfied. Do you know why the debt was satisfied right there? And it's a present tense word. Because he was the lamb that was slain before the conception of the world. This debt was pardoned before he ever did it. Before there was ever a problem, he made the solution for it. He knew it was going to be a problem. Because she has received of the Lord's hand double for all of her offenses. Double for all of her offenses. So God said, she's already paid the price. We don't need to punish her anymore. See, today everybody thinks you have to punish somebody. If you paid for it once, why would you have to pay for it again? See? And even in our system, in the worldly system that is very crude compared to anything God would have, they have a law called double jeopardy. You can't punish somebody twice for the same crime. Okay? Verse 3, the voice of him that cries in the wilderness. Now, if Jesus was sent to the wilderness, where do you think our journey might lead us?
Ditto.
Ditto. That's right. We all have to pass through this desert experience. So it's not something we can sidestep. Like me and Teddy was talking before, you got to take the first step before you can take the second step so you can take the third step. It's all preparation in our walk, isn't it? It's all process. So we got to realize that. Okay, in the desert, we got to go there. And then it says prepare. Literally, it should say, make clear. You know, clear away. You know, get the rocks out of the way, get the stumps out of the way, make a good solid road to walk on. But ye, the way or the lifestyle, the way it can be symbolic of the lifestyle. So clear out a path in your life, because this is internal, isn't it? Clear out a path in your life that God can walk on. Don't make him climb up over mountains and hills. Don't make him climb over rocks and tree stumps and cactuses and scorpions and all that stuff. Let's just get it cleared out. That's what he's saying. Make a way that God can clearly walk through. Wouldn't that be making yourself submissive to the Lord? Would that be what it was really about? Okay. Make straight or level, I should say, make level in the desert a highway or a higher way for our Elohim. It's not talking about God the Father. It's doing it for our Elohim. Our Elohim has to prepare this way for yourself, okay? You have to prepare your own way, don't you? Every valley shall be exalted and every mountain and hill shall be made low. Those mountains and those hills are governments, laws, rules and regulations in our mind. Because this is an internal thing. We're not talking about them things out there. We've got to get this internal because that's where God lives. He lives in us. So we got to deal with the things in us that these are symbolic of. So all these rules and regulations and laws and governments and things that I have to live under, denominational things and, you know, whatever they might be, social issues, what do they call it, different races and all this stuff, you know, all those things. Those are not important. If one thing I can say about God that I really believe is he's colorblind, I don't think race has any issue to God. We're all children of the Most High God. Race is an issue for humans. Animals don't know the difference between people. They're just people. Okay? We have those issues as humans.
So God will humble you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And make you submit.
Absolutely, you're going to do it. But right now he's talking about first fruit. Mm-hmm. He's talking about first fruit. But every mountain, every hill will be made low, or literally, it'll be what? It'll be humiliated, you know, we'll be brought down. If we don't submit to it, if we try to wrestle with God, who do you think's going to win?
God does.
He's going to get it, you know. Okay, there's no argument there. And the crooked shall be made straight, and the rough places shall be the impassable places, what it should say, the places where we don't want to let God walk through our valleys and through our mountains. Say we don't want him to be in there because that's our sacred place. We'll give you almost all of it. We're going to keep a little bit in the corner for ourselves. That's the impassable places. I've heard people say, well, I don't mind giving God 90% of it, but I'm going to keep about 10% of it back the way I want to do it. Well, that's where he's wanting to walk. See, because he's got some real big feet. And when he steps down on your rough places, guess what they're going to be? They're going to be kind of level when he gets done. He's got a way of getting that stone crushed up. Okay? So they will be made level. And the glory of the Lord. Now here the word Lord, it's not like it is up above Elohim. This is Yahweh. So the glory of the Father shall be what? Revealed or uncovered. Okay? And all flesh shall see it. How much flesh?
All.
All flesh shall see it. That means everybody, doesn't it? Everybody's going to see the glory of the Lord revealed. Where is it going to be revealed?
In you.
In you. In us. His glory is in us.
Also, couldn't it be all of your flesh?
Well, but I don't think it's in that context. I think it's still in all flesh on the earth is going to see the glory of the Lord revealed in vessels. Okay, it's going to be in a vessel. Just as it was revealed in him, the whole world is going to see the first fruit sons with the God revealed, with the Christ revealed in them.
But that's, is it going or shall, or it's happening right now?
It's happening as a process.
Right now.
It's a process, yeah. There's been people in every generation since the time of Jesus, and I'll use the first example that I think was the greatest example in the Scriptures, was Paul. He walked and taught things and saw things that nobody else had seen prior to him. And then how about John, who wrote the Revelation? He saw things nobody else saw. And he wasn't even allowed to reveal them, was he? See, there's people in every generation that are going to see things, and they're not going to be big famous people, I promise you that. They're not going to be on TBN and CNN and NBC and CBS and all that stuff. They're going to be people doing what God wants inconspicuously. See, Jesus didn't go to CNN and say, hey boys, did you see the miracles I created? I'm going to throw a big miracle crusade down here in Cincinnati next week. You going to come down and film it? What did he tell the people that he healed?
Shh,
don't tell nobody. Just go pay your sacrifice at the offering like you're supposed to because you're still under the law. Go make your sacrifice to the priest. Go show it to the priest. Clear yourself there and go on. Shh, be quiet. Hey, don't tell nobody. It's not about being famous, boys. I'm promising you. Because, and then the reason everybody's going to see it is because the mouth of the Lord has spoken it. Whatever he says is law. It cannot be broken. I don't care what anybody says, anybody does. They haven't got enough tea in China. They haven't got enough anything anywhere else of any kind of material that can change anything God's going to do because his mind is already set. Remember what Isaiah said? His mind was set like a flint. Hard stone. It's hard to break it. You're not going to break it, in other words. And he said this, and the voice said, cry. And this is Isaiah speaking to him. And he said, what shall I cry? And he said, cry, all flesh is grass. Right? and all the goodliness thereof is as the flower of the field. Now, here's what it should say. All flesh is green or alive. All flesh has life in it, doesn't it? And the, not the goodliness, but the beauty thereof is as the flower of the field. He's telling you the life you have in this body is as the flower outside in a field. How long does that flower last? A few days. Some flowers, like an orchid, only last a very short period of time unless they're really controlled. Yeah, there's really sensitive flowers that don't last very long at all. But it's a very short, brief period of time, isn't it?
It's all temporal.
Yep. Didn't James say this life is like a vapor? It's gone. And that's what he's conveying to us.
King Solomon said it's vanity.
It's all vanity. It's all vanity. And the grass, he says on verse 7, and the grass withers and the flower fades because the Spirit of the Father, here it's the Father, it's the Lord, it's Yahweh, of the Father blows upon it, and surely the people is grass, or as grass. So when the Spirit blows upon it, it's going to wither. Whose time is it to take you or bring you?
God.
It's all up to God. See, we don't have to worry about dying or living. All we're supposed to do is what we're supposed to do. We have a mission on to complete. Complete your mission. Don't worry about it. Paul came to a place in his life, he said, I'm in dire straits. I could go on and be with the Lord, but it's better for you that I stay. But it's better for me that I go. But it's better for you that I stay, so I'm going to stay. And see, we can come to a place like, we can come to a place where we have reached a point where we have completed our mission, but if we're willing to give it up, and that was the heart of the Christ. He was willing to go to the cross and die for everybody, wasn't he? Just like, what did Stephen say? Father, don't lay this sin to their charge. I'll carry it. Yeah, I'll carry it. Don't lay it to them, you know. Same as Jesus said, forgive them, you know. I'll carry it. Let me have it. And that's the heart of Christ. And when we have that heart of Christ, even though we might have completed that mission, there's still a purpose for us to be here. Whatever. Yeah, that's his call. All I'm saying is, it's all up to him. It's all up to him. But the grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of our God shall stand into the ages. No matter what. There's nothing going to change God's word. Many a man have tried, but none have succeeded. Verse 9, he goes on and says, O Zion. Zion is the permanent capital of Jerusalem. It's speaking of the third day, the third realm, the tabernacles realm. Okay? He said, that brings good tidings or good news. Well, see, in Passover and Pentecost, there's no good news. Because all they want to talk about is demons, devils, hell, burning, torment forever. And my God is love and forgiveness and understanding and compassion, tenderness. And I just don't see that in Passover and Pentecost. I'm sorry, I don't. But that's okay, because it is in Zion. It is in Zion. He said, get you up to the high mountain. That's Jerusalem. That's Mount Zion. O Jerusalem, that brings good news. Lift up your voice with not just strength, but ability and with substance. You got to have something to say, don't you? It's not just strength, but it's ability and substance. So when I speak or you speak, we should have some substance in the words we speak. We should have some kind of substance to say so we know that we can reach people and they can get a hold of it and know that what we're doing is not of our own doing, but it's of God. So lift up your voice with strength, with your ability, with your substance. Lift it up and be not afraid. Now that's important. Do you know how many people are afraid to speak the truth? I hear people all the time say, you know, there's two things we shouldn't talk about, and that's politics and religion. I said, then what in God's name should you talk about? Garbage? Trash?
Drama?
What do you want to talk about? Because if you don't talk about truth, I don't care about politics, because that's the garbage and trash too. But in talking about, when they say religion, they're just lumping everything in that, you know. But if you want to talk about the truth, I'm sorry, they're not going to get me in a conversation very long that I'm not going to talk about some truth with them. Yeah. They're going to say something that I'm going to relate to, and I'm going to give them something.
You got to either talk about spirit and truth or about carnal stuff.
It's the only way I see it. And I see people all the time. Just Saturday when I was waiting for Lois to come and meet with me for breakfast, I was talking with some gentlemen, and someone opened it up and asked questions, you know. And when he did, I began to share some things, and this other man just jumped up and left. And one of the guys at the table says, pointed at him, like, look at that. He's running. I said, it's like a covey of quail going up whenever I start talking about the truth. You know, the ones that don't want to hear it, they get away. They just can't handle the pressure. And it's okay, because I know they really can't hear it. In the Old Testament, when God spoke, there was two things heard. The ones he was speaking to that had ears heard what God said, and the rest of them heard thunder and lightning. So they were hearing the thunder and lightning. You better run. You know, whenever you hear thunder and lightning out here, what do? Don't you hide for something to get under? Get some cover? It's okay. It can get you, so you need some cover. Okay, finish up at 9th verse. Says, be not afraid, and say to the cities of praise, Judah, behold your Elohim. Don't be afraid to say your Elohim. Say, not God the Father, but your Elohim. Behold, the Lord God will come. Didn't say he might come or maybe will come. He will come with a strong hand, right? Literally, it should say boldness. He'll come with boldness. There are several places in the New Testament where he talked about increasing our boldness. The disciples wanted their boldness increased. He taught with boldness that other people didn't teach with, right? You can't have somebody say, well, I think this is the way it is. Maybe this is the way it should be. I'm not sure, but I'm going to say, I don't know. Well, then what in God's name are you teaching? Right? I mean, if you don't know, then you should get out of your stand and let somebody else get in there and teach if you don't know what you're doing. And his arm, that's his strength, shall rule for him. And his strength is his truth. Behold, his reward is within him. Okay? And that word him is an added word. So now let's read it again. For his reward is within. Where's your reward, brother? It's within you. When you reveal who you are, that is your reward. And his work is where? His work was before time. Remember when he said on the cross, it's what? It's finished. His work was done before the conception of the world. Before the foundation of the world, the conception of the world. It was done. What he did on that cross was just to show the doubtful, unbelieving people that it already happened. That's all. And he shall feed his flock like a shepherd. He shall gather the lambs with his arm or his strength. Now look, I'm going to go back to that part, first part of that 11th verse. He shall feed his flock like a shepherd. Do the sheep have to beg anything from God? From their shepherd? Do you have to beg from God? He said he's going to feed you. It says in Proverbs, he'll not suffer the soul of the righteous to famish. So guess what? He's going to feed you. If you're one of the chosen ones, he's going to choose you to become a shepherd and under-shepherd from him so that you can do the same job he did. Didn't he tell his disciples, you're going to do greater works than I have done? What do you think that might be? You think he lied? Then guess what? We've got something to do, don't we? We've got some work to do. First thing is get ourselves right. Amen. And quit judging everybody else. Take care of ourselves first, and then we'll be okay. Yes. And he will carry them in his bosom. Literally, it'll carry him within, in the midst. Okay? He's going to carry him within himself. Didn't Jesus make a statement in John? He said, John 17, or John 15, one of the two. He said, Father, make them one with me as I am one with you. Was Jesus in the heart of the Father? Then where are we? I like that one. See, I like that one. We're there too. Because Jesus asked it. Do you think Jesus could ask anything because he only asked in the nature and the character of his Father? Do you think there's anything that he could have asked that Father wouldn't have given him? Done deal, isn't it? It's a done deal. Okay. And shall gently lead, right? Gently lead those that are with young. Now, did it say condemn those that are with young? Beat them up, tell them they're going to hell, they're going to be burnt if they don't do what the preacher tells them? It says gently lead or protect those that are with young. Who has measured the waters or the nations in the hollow of his hand? There was even a song written, he had the whole world in his hand. Okay? He's got it all. It's in his works. It's all his. And meted out or measured out the heavens and with the span comprehended, or, and that word comprehended literally means maintained or kept the dust of the earth in a threefold measure. Now, why is that important? There's a threefold measure of the dust of the earth. Passover, Pentecost, tabernacles. But you know what? One of them's going to resurrect. One of them resurrects up out of that dust realm, don't it? And it becomes a star in the heavenlies. But the language actually says it's a threefold measure. And weighed the mountains in scales and the hills in justice. Those earthly governments that's in our head, he said, God's already weighed them in the scales and in the balance. A scales and a balance is symbolism for justice, being equal and fair. Okay? So he said, I've already weighed them out. And there's no government of this earth that's in this earth up here between my ears. There is no government that's fair. There's no one that's just in there. See? He said the whole world lies in deception. There's nothing just in here. And not in my natural mind. Only in my spirit is there anything just. Same with you. The only thing just is in your spirit. In your flesh, there's nothing just or fair about it. System ain't right. Verse 13. Who has directed the Spirit of the Lord? The word or right there is a word called ish in the Hebrew. 376, it should be man. Who has directed the Spirit of the Lord? What man, being his counselor, has taught him? What man has taught God? That's funny, isn't it? With whom took he counsel, and who instructed or understood him, what should say, and taught him in the path of judgment, and taught him knowledge, and showed him the way of understanding? Now, what man could ever do that with God? It's impossible. There's people that think they can. Behold, the nations are as a drop of a bucket and are counted as a small dust in the balance. Behold, he takes up the isles as a very little thing. And Lebanon is not sufficient to burn, nor the beasts thereof sufficient for a burnt offering. Lebanon represents the righteousness of the earth. In Isaiah 64:6, I'll read it to you real quick. Just take a second. 64:6, it says, but we are all as an unclean thing, and all our righteousness are as filthy rags, and we all do fade as a leaf, and our iniquities like the wind has taken them away. There's none that calls upon the name. It goes on and on. But the same thing. Okay? But Lebanon is the righteousness of the earth. It's not good enough. Verse 17, all nations before him are as nothing, and they are counted to him as less than nothing in vanity. Do you think, since we're talking internal, when he says nations, you think he's talking about Egypt or Russia or China or Japan or the United States? He's talking about the imaginations in our mind, all them things that we build up in our head from them cherubim that we all possess. That was a gift of God. Didn't say you had to like it, just say you got it. Okay?
That builds that fire up just
yep.
So the impurity.
In verse 18, he goes on and says, to whom will then will you liken God, or to what likeness will you compare to him? The workman mounts a graven image, or carved idol, and the goldsmith spreads it over with gold and fuses silver chains. Gold and silver. They have the nature. They think the nature of God on this thing is piece of wood, and put the redemption on there with the chains of bondage, of chains that the church system has in our minds.
Man-made
It's man-made idols, but we make all these things that are so valuable, and they use gold and silver, gold being the nature of God, silver being redemption. They're tying us up in this religious system, and we get it in ourselves, and we agree to it, and actually we put ourselves in the chains. And that's just because we were in ignorance at one time. Sooner or later, we come out of it, hopefully. Verse 20 goes on and says, "He that is so impoverished that he has no oblation chooses a tree," and tree speaks of humanity, humanism, "that will not rot. He seeks to him a cunning workman to prepare a graven image or an idol." And you know what? It don't have to be a chunk of wood out there. You can get somebody to create an idol right in your head. Well, you seek out that cunning man, Adam, in you, and he can prepare that idol in your head and cover it with any kind of gold or silver you want, can he? Them cherubim can do it for you. And that shall not move, is what it should say. It cannot even move. The Living Bible says it, this idol that cannot even move. Well, why would I want to worship something that's an inanimate object? Probably the funniest thing I ever heard was the Church of the Filet Mignon. Y'all know what a filet mignon is. That's a very elite piece of meat, you know. And the priest usually got to eat that. Well, there's a prison in the prison systems in our country because they say we have to separate church and state. So if anybody says they have a religion, whatever it might be, you can't knock on it. And you have to provide them, if they're incarcerated, you have to provide them with whatever they need for their worship service. Well, they worship the filet mignon and they sacrifice it in fire at the end of the service and eat it. Have you figured that one out yet? Our tax dollars buy them filet mignons on Sunday morning so they can cook them on a grill and eat them themselves. They have a great steak dinner every day, which we probably can't afford. That's our system for you. Great system, isn't it? Don't you love this country? Most of the world does, but they love what we do. They make fun of us, how stupid we are, but that's the way it is. Okay, verse 21. "Have you not known? Have you not heard? Has it not been told you from the beginning?" Remember what he said? "I'm going to go away and send you another comfort. He's going to call all things to remembrance, whatever I've said to you. I'm going to come it back to you. Have you not understood from the foundation of the earth, from the Christ? Isn't Christ the foundation? He's what sustains this earth that I live in. Doesn't he sustain yours? The Christ is my foundation. 1 Corinthians 3:11. "It is he that sits upon the circle of the earth." It's the Christ that sits on the earth. "And the inhabitants there are as grasshoppers, insignificant, little tiny things, that stretched out the heavens as a curtain and spreads them out as a tent to dwell in." Guess what we are? We're the heavens. God dwells in his people. And it says God dwells in the heavens. So guess where God is? He's in us, see? We're the heavens. "That brings the princes to nothing. He makes the judges of the earth as vanity." So the judges that set themselves up like little gods on the earth today, he said he's going to make the judges as vanity. Worthless and transitory, aren't they? Temporary. In their mind, they're legends, and that's the only place. That's okay. "Yea, they shall not be planted, they shall not be sown, and their stalk shall not take root in the earth, and he shall also blow upon them, and they shall wither, and the hurricane shall take them away as straw." Wow. That's not much of a future for some of them, is it? Did he say he was going to throw them in hell and burn them? No. He's just going to remove them from their position of being superior to everybody else in their minds. That's all. He's just going to remove them. He's going to take them away from their place that they feel so secure in. Verse 25, he goes on and says, "To whom then will you liken me? Or who or shall I be equal to? Says the Holy One," or says God. "Lift up your eyes on high and behold and see who has created these things. That brings out their host by number. He called them all by name by the greatness of his might. Because he is strong in power, no man," not one, but "no man," same word ish again, 376 in the Strong's Hebrew Dictionary, no man lacks. When it says not one fails, no man lacks. What does he mean by no man lacks? You have everything you need within you. You're just not aware of it. That's why you have to stop looking at everybody else and start looking internally in yourself for that treasure that he has buried in your earth. All you got to do is get the dust blowed off of it. Guess what you're going to find? What did Job say? When he has tried me, I shall come forth as gold. See? When I get all the dust blowed off of me, the only thing that's left is gold. That's the great thing.
And the dust is
the flesh. The dust is the flesh. It's just going back to the dust. Verse 27 says, why sayest thou, O Jacob, and why speakest, O Israel? He said, he's telling Jacob, even in his change, see, he was Jacob the conniver, and he was Israel the peace. Okay? He come to some peace. But he said, why are you still doing this? My way is hid from the Lord, and my judgment is passed over from my God, from my Elohim. God ain't seeing what I'm doing, right? You know how many people believe that? They think they can get by with something. There's nothing hid from God. But they still think it. And he's just telling you, as long as you think you're getting by with anything, you're still in that Jacob or that immature Israel reign. That's Passover and Pentecost. You're still there. And I'm not talking about organizations out there. I'm talking about experiences within. My Passover and my Pentecostal experience within. As long as I'm in those two realms, I'm still immature. I think I can hide from God. Got news for you. The it says the spirit is full of eyes, doesn't it? Got eyes everywhere. He sees everything. Verse 28 goes on and says, have thou not known, have thou not heard, that the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, faints not, neither is weary, and there is no searching of his understanding. What? You know what I wrote beside that little piece of that verse? Wow. Because that's what it said to me when I heard that in my head when I read that. There is no searching of his understanding. See, some people think they can read a book and get it. It's not about reading the book. This book is a witness of what was written in your heart before the foundation of the world. Do you hear me? Psalm 19 says the stars utter it day and night. They tell us about the gospel. It's written in the stars. If anybody would take the time to look at it, I've got a few books right here written by Bullinger. It's fantastic to see that every star is telling the gospel. And men have tried to pervert the meanings into this what they call it, zodiac or whatever it is, astrology. And it's not the truth about it. They're perverting it for some other reason. But the gospel was written there that it can't be touched by man. See, they can pervert paper, they can mistranslate this, but you ain't moving them stars, are you? They're there, and they're going to stay there. Read Psalm 19, you'll see that real quick. Okay? But there's no searching out of his understanding. Understanding from God is only one way you can describe it. You might use two words, but it's basically the same thing. It's a gift of God. It's a revelation. Isn't that still a gift from God? So you can say a gift or a revelation, but they're of God. There's nothing you can do. I can study until my eyeballs roll out on the desk in front of me, and it will not make me understand anything if God hasn't given me the ability, the gift, to understand it. And there's people that spend their whole life and walk around blind and deaf in Scripture. And truly thinking they're studying. But it doesn't make any difference how hard you study. If it's not of God, you cannot understand. He creates the hearing ear and the seeing eye. Read the book. It tells you that. Okay? Verse 29 says, he gives power to the faint or the exhausted ones. When you come to the end of your rope,
yes,
that's when God's there to meet you. See, he's there all along, but he's going to be silent until you have exhausted everything you have. And when you've exhausted everything you have, guess what? You ain't got no place to hang on to but him. That's all there is. You got nothing left. Then you will reach to him for help. And that's the only way you... And see, it's not that we're any different from anybody else. All people are that way. The whole universe is that way. See, so we got to realize he understands it. He created it. So he's sitting there waiting for us to come to our senses. That's all. Realize we was insane and he wants to give us a good mind.
And sits in the heavens.
Laughs. Yep. At the heathens, I always like to put in there. But he gives power to the exhausted, and to them that have no might, no strength, he increases their strength. You want to make it? Then let him wear you out. I got one time, and I really got frustrated with God. I really, really did, and I said I would never recommend anybody to do what I did. But I got upset with God because things wasn't working the way I wanted it. And every one of us has been there. But I got to the point where I said one night, we had a Bible study and it went all night long. And I said, God, I'm going to tell you. Well, I did. I didn't say I recommend this to anybody. It's just funny because I said, God, let me hear. I've had it. I have done everything you have told me. I'm teaching people. I'm doing everything within my power to do what I can do. And I had not walked into the baptism of the Spirit yet, speaking in tongues and everything. And I said, I'm laying hands on people and they're speaking in tongues and I'm not doing it. And this is kind of frustrating to me. You know, I'm ad-libbing here a little bit. This was frustrating to me. And I said, I have worked my tail off. And that very night, I laid hands on two people and they received the baptism, began speaking in tongues. And I was so jealous, I couldn't stand it. And I said, God, when I stopped talking to you tonight, it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. We started our Bible study at 7, and it was 3 o'clock in the morning when everybody was gone. And I sat there in the easy chair in my living room, and I said, God, you know, we had a little talk, and then I told him how I felt. And he was laughing, I'm sure. But I said, I'm not going to talk to you again until you do this.
I'm going to hold my breath.
Yeah, that's the same mentality. And you know what? The next morning about 9 o'clock, because it was 3 o'clock then, that morning about 9 o'clock, I woke up speaking in tongues. But see, I got to the end of my rope. I was exhausted. I had read books that said you had to be in the kitchen at 9 o'clock in the morning doing frying eggs or something, and you could speak in tongues.
Lord knows you wouldn't have got it.
I didn't get it there. You had to be in the bathroom at 5 o'clock in the evening at such and doing, reading something, you know. And I tried all these things that didn't work. But when I come to the end of my rope, when I was exhausted with all the strength that I could do, I just said, it'd been the best thing to do to say I give up. But I just said, I ain't talking to you no more until then. But the next morning, it was all okay. Which a few hours later, he waited 6 hours. Imagine that, 6. He took me to the end of it. He exhausted me in my own strength. And then like, gosh, it's not so bad when he takes over. It really isn't. But that's where I get out of that. You know, he took me to the end of my rope in that realm. And I just walked on. And then from then on, it's been so much simpler because I realize now it's not about what I do. It's what he desires. And it's just so much better. Mm-hmm. So much better. And he says, verse 30, even the youth shall faint and be weary or be exhausted. Okay? Same thing.
I did not have you just talk about that.
Even the young ones will be exhausted. Okay? And the young men shall utterly fall. But they that wait upon the Lord, and that is Yahweh. That's not Elohim. They that wait upon the Father.
What that wait?
Yeah. Wait. That's not heavy. That's just, it may take a long time.
It's actively waiting.
You're just sitting here waiting. You're ready. You're preparing yourself. But you're not volunteering. You're just sitting and waiting on your orders to march. And the Lord shall renew their strength. Renew. You know the key to that word? That you had it before. See, he's going to renew. You can't renew something if you haven't had it before, can you? So you were with him before the foundation of the world, Job 38:5, right? Where were you, Job, when the morning stars sung together? Right?
Amen.
See? We were with him before the foundation. So he's going to renew their strength, and they shall mount up with wings as eagles. That's the Passover experience. And they shall run and not be weary. That's your Pentecostal experience. And they shall walk or live and not faint or tire. See? You know why? Because now you're no longer laboring. Now you labor to enter into his rest. And guess who does the labor?
He does, because you.
It's he does it. I'm resting in him.
You won't be exhausted.
You can't get exhausted. I've had, and this ain't nothing to me, it's just God. We had trips where we went to way out west, up in Minnesota, and we went up into Canada and places where I would minister sometime for 17, 18 hours a day. Days on end, just keep going. And you know what? Didn't feel a thing. Had more power and energy than I ever felt in my life. And when I got done, it was like, just fainted, you just fell down because I was through. When I come to the end of what I was supposed to do, I knew when it was time to quit because I had no energy left. Yeah, it just took it out of me. But as long as I was doing what I was supposed to, had no lack of energy. But boy, I'm sure glad to get home, I'm telling you that. 4 or 5 days of that. And driving about 2,500 miles on top of that. It's tough. Any questions? Did we get it right this time?